The men climbed the hill, and they were tired when they reached the top. But there they saw a crystal shop that offered refreshing mint tea. They went in to drink the tea, which was served in beautiful crystal glasses.
"My wife never thought of this," said one,
and he bought some crystal. He was entertaining guests that night, and the guests will be impressed by the beauty of the glassware. The other man remarked that tea was always more delicious when it was served in crystal, because the aroma was retained. The third said that it was a tradition in the Orient to use crystal glasses for tea because it had magical powers. Before long, the news spread, and a great many people began to climb the hill to see the shop that was doing something new in a trade that was so old. Other shops were opened that served tea in crystal, but they weren't at the top of a hill, and they had little business. Eventually, the merchant had to hire two more employees. He began to import enormous quantities of tea along with his crystal, and his shop was sought out by men and women with a thirst for things new. And in that way, the months passed. The boy awoke before dawn. It had been 11 months and 9 days since he had first set foot on the African continent. He dressed in his Arabian clothing of white linen, bought especially for this day. He put his headcloth in place and secured it with a ring made of camel skin. Wearing his new sandals, he descended the stairs silently. The city was still sleeping. He prepared himself a sandwich and drank some hot tea from a crystal glass. Then he sat in the sun-filled doorway, smoking the hookah. He smoked in silence, thinking of nothing, and listening to the sound of the wind that brought the scent of the desert. When he had finished his smoke, he reached into one of his pockets and sat there for a few moments regarding what he had withdrawn. It was a bundle of money, enough to buy himself 120 sheep, a return ticket, and a license to import products from Africa into his own country. He waited patiently for the merchant to awaken and open the shop. Then the two went off to have some more tea. "I'm leaving today," said the boy. "I have the money I need to buy my sheep, and you have the money you need to go to Mecca." The old man said nothing. "Will you give me your blessing?" asked the boy. "You have helped me." The man continued to prepare his tea, saying nothing. Then he turned to the boy.
"I'm proud of you," he said. "You brought a new feeling into my crystal shop. But you know that I'm not going to Mecca. Just as you know that you're not going to buy your sheep."
"Who told you that?" asked the boy, startled.
"Maktub," said the old crystal merchant.
And he gave the boy his blessing. The boy went to his room and packed his belongings. They filled 3 sacks. As he was leaving, he saw, in the corner of the room, his old shepherd's pouch. It was bunched up, and he'd hardly thought of it for a long time. As he took his jacket out of the pouch, thinking to give it to someone in the street, the 2 stones fell to the floor. Urim and Thummim. It made the boy think of the old king, and it startled him to realize how long it had been since he had thought of him. For nearly a year he'd been working incessantly, thinking only of putting aside enough money so that he could return to Spain with pride.
"Never stop dreaming," the old king had said. "Follow the omens."
The boy picked up Urim and Thummim, and once again had the strange sensation that the old king was nearby. He had worked hard for a year, and the omens were that it was time to go. "I'm going to go back to doing just what I did before," the boy thought, "even though the sheep didn't teach me to speak Arabic." But the sheep had taught him something even more important, that there was a language in the world that everyone understood, a language the boy had used throughout the time that he was trying to improve things at the shop. It was the language of enthusiasm, of things accomplished with love and purpose, and as part of a search for something believed in and desired.
Tangier was no longer a strange city, and he felt that just as he had conquered this place, he could conquer the world.
When you want something, all the universe conspires to help you achieve it, the old king had said.
But the old king hadn't said anything about being robbed, or about endless deserts, or about people who know what their dreams are but they don't want to realize them. The old king hadn't told him that the pyramids were just a pile of stones, or that anyone could build one in his backyard. And he had forgotten to mention that when you have enough money to buy a flock larger than the one you had before, you should buy it. The boy picked up his pouch and put it with his other things. He went down the stairs and found the merchant waiting on a foreign couple while two other customers walked about the shop drinking tea from crystal glasses. It was more activity than usual for this time of the morning. From where he stood, he saw for the first time that the old merchant's hair was very much like the hair of the old king. He remembered the smile of the candy seller on his first day in Tangier, when he had nothing to eat and nowhere to go. That smile had also been like the old king's smile. It's almost as if he had been here and left his mark, he thought. And yet none of these people has ever met the old king. On the other hand, he said that he always appeared to help those who are trying to realize their personal legend. He left without saying goodbye to the crystal merchant. He didn't want to cry with the other people there. He was going to miss the place and all the good things he'd learned. He was more confident in himself, though, and felt as though he could conquer the world. "But I'm going back to the fields that I know to take care of my flock again." He said that to himself with certainty, but he was no longer happy with his decision. He had worked for an entire year to make a dream come true, and that dream, minute by minute, was becoming less important. Maybe because that wasn't really his dream. Who knows? Maybe it's better to be like the crystal merchant. Never go to Mecca and just go through life wanting to do so, he thought, again trying to convince himself. But as he held Urim and Thummim in his hand, they had transmitted to him the strength and will of the old king. By coincidence, or maybe it was an omen, the boy thought, he came to the bar that he had entered on his first day there. The thief wasn't there, and the owner brought him a cup of tea. "I can always go back to being a shepherd," the boy thought. "I learned how to care for sheep, and I haven't forgotten how that's done. But maybe I'll never have another chance to get to the pyramids in Egypt." The old man wore a breastplate of gold, and he knew about my past. He really was a king, a wise king. The hills of Andalusia were only 2 hours away, but there was an entire desert between him and the pyramids. Yet the boy felt that there was another way to regard his situation. He was actually 2 hours closer to his treasure. The fact that the 2 hours had stretched into an entire year didn't matter. "I know why I want to get back to my flock," he thought. "I understand sheep. They're no longer a problem, and they can be good friends. On the other hand, I don't know if the desert can be a friend. And it's in the desert that I have to search for my treasure. If I don't find it, I can always go home. I finally have enough money and all the time I need. Why not?" He suddenly felt tremendously happy. He could always go back to being a shepherd. He could always become a crystal salesman again. Maybe the world had other hidden treasures, but he had a dream and he had met with a king. That doesn't happen to just anyone. He was planning as he left the bar. He had remembered that one of the crystal merchant's suppliers transported his crystal by means of caravans that crossed the desert. He held Urim and Thummim in his hand. Because of these two stones, he was once again on the way to his treasure.
"I am always nearby when someone wants to realize their personal legend," the old king had told him.
What could it cost to go over to the supplier's warehouse and find out if the pyramids were really that far away? The Englishman was sitting on a bench in a structure that smelled of animals, sweat and dust. It was part warehouse, part corral.
"I never thought I'd end up in a place like this," he thought, as he leafed through the pages of a chemical journal.
10 years at the university, and here I am in a corral. But he had to move on. He believed in omens. All his life and all his studies were aimed at finding the one true language of the universe. First, he had studied Esperanto, then the world's religions, and now it was alchemy. He knew how to speak Esperanto. He understood all the major religions well, but he wasn't yet an alchemist. He had unraveled the truths behind important questions, but his studies had taken him to a point beyond which he couldn't seem to go. He had tried in vain to establish a relationship with an alchemist, but the alchemists were strange people who thought only about themselves and almost always refused to help him. Who knows, maybe they had failed to discover the secret of the masterwork, the Philosopher's Stone, and for this reason kept their knowledge to themselves. He had already spent much of the fortune left him by his father, fruitlessly seeking the Philosopher's Stone. He'd spent enormous amounts of time at the great libraries of the world and had purchased all the rarest and most important volumes on alchemy. In one, he had read that many years ago, a famous Arabian alchemist had visited Europe. It was said that he was more than 200 years old, and that he had discovered the Philosopher's Stone and the Elixir of Life. The Englishman had been profoundly impressed by the story, but he would never have thought it more than just a myth, had not a friend of his, returning from an archaeological expedition in the desert, told him about an Arab that was possessed of exceptional powers. "He lives in the Al-Fayum oasis," his friend had said, "and people say that he's 200 years old and is able to transform any metal into gold." The Englishman could not contain his excitement. He cancelled all his commitments and pulled together the most important of his books, and now here he was, sitting inside a dusty, smelly warehouse. Outside, a huge caravan was being prepared for a crossing of the Sahara and was scheduled to pass through Al-Fayum. "I'm going to find that damned alchemist," the Englishman thought, and the odour of the animals became a bit more tolerable. A young Arab, also loaded down with baggage, entered and greeted the Englishman. "Where are you bound?" asked the young Arab. "I'm going into the desert," the man answered, turning back to his reading. He didn't want any conversation at this point. What he needed to do was to review all he had learned over the years, because the alchemist would certainly put him to the test. The young Arab took out a book and began to read. The book was written in Spanish. "That's good," thought the Englishman. He spoke Spanish better than Arabic, and if this boy was going to Al-Fayum, there would be someone to talk to when there was no other important things to do.